Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
I'm here with two great people. Rick Leckie is a Vistage chair in California doing great things. We're going to hear from him in a minute. And our featured speaker is Harry Barth, who is the founder and senior managing partner for the asset protection, estate planning, and business planning firm Barth Calderon. You can see this is our office building there in Southern California. We've got 6,000 clients across the country. We're very big on education like this. Harry's a top speaker. In high demand everywhere on topics like this. And so we're going to get into it in a minute here. I want to start, Rick, with you. Thanks for being here. I'd just love for you to introduce yourself and tell people who the heck you are.
Happy to do that. This is Rick Leckie. I am a 20-year-plus Vistage chair. And Harry, I'm delighted to, see you. I haven't seen you for a little while. And I have two CEO groups in Orange County, Inland Empire, Northern San Diego County of California. And I'm delighted to be here today.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And let's get over to Harry. And one thing I want to mention is I'm going to put up in the chat a link. If you want to get with Harry and the team one-on-one afterwards, you have questions. This is going to get highly, you know, interesting and technical. You may have some questions on your own situation. Happy to offer a complimentary assessment as it relates to your own situation. And then also we'll put Rick's information up there as well. So Harry, take it away.
Well, it's good to be here, Rick. Great to see you again. And thank you, Paul. Well, we have a lot to talk about today in the hour that we have. It's going to be a fun-filled, fact-filled hour about probably one of the most significant acts passed by the federal government that nobody knew about, and how it impacts people. So it's called the Corporate Transparency Act, and today we're going to learn the ins and the outs of it, the do's and the don'ts, and the penalties for not following what it should be. So first, some definitions. You're going to hear me use the word FinCEN a lot, and FinCEN is an abbreviation for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And it's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network of the United States Department of Treasury. That is the agency that has been tasked with putting the Corporate Transparency Act and enforcing it and putting it together. Its impact, ladies and gentlemen, is on 33 million businesses that exist in the United States of America. Every pre-existing business, unless there's an exemption, must comply with this act. And we're going to talk to you about what compliance is all about today. Some of it's simple, some of it is highly complex. And is the government serious about compliance? Well, Rick, guess what? If we don't comply by the compliance due dates, which I will share with you in a little while, it's now a $591 a day fine. Then there's a $10,000 criminal fine and up to 2 years in jail. So they're kind of serious about this. This act was a bipartisan act that was passed in 2021, but it was delayed its implementation till January 1st, 2024. And we're going to draw a line today between new entities being formed after January 1st, 2024, and pre-existing entities that are in existence prior to January 2024. Why'd the government do it? Well, it really started in 9/11. And then we had the Patriot Act, Know Your Client, and other forms, Sarbanes-Oxley, things that were designed to let the government know. And what the Corporate Transparency Act does is builds a database that is for allegedly for law enforcement use only, that is so the government, our government, and other governments can know who are the human beings behind the veil of the LLCs, the LPs, and the corporations. Now, it's very important to understand that, critically important to understand that. Because the goal, as we learned today, is the end of the day, who's the human beings behind the entity? So with that in mind, let's take a look and see who has to report. It's targeted, ladies and gentlemen, to small businesses, because it's in small businesses where terrorist financing, money laundering, tax evasion, and other things covered. You have the Pandora Papers, the Panama Papers, all of those things. But behind the veils of all that, Joe Biden has 18 LLCs. You know, the issue is who is behind it and what's the money that's being transferred. So the government says we're about to find out. We're going to build this database. So again, I repeat, every LLC, limited partnership, limited liability partnership, and corporation that is not exempt needs to understand how this works. So I guess one of the first things we should do, and a couple things that we need to know, there is the National Small Business Association has a lawsuit running through federal court to try to have the Corporate Transparency Act declared unconstitutional. And there's some grounds for that, which I will go into when we get to the specifics of the act. But my humble opinion after 50 years of doing this, and it's been 50 years, is that the vast majority of the Corporate Transparency Act is here to stay. Some parts of it may be declared unconstitutional, but it's already been adopted similarly in all the modern Western economies, in the modern Asian economies. We pretty much have to get involved with doing it for a simple notary to get a bank loan. We got to know who the people are. So I think that unconstitutionality argument will more than likely fail. The other act that's been passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate, and not yet signed by the president, is an act that changes some of the time limitations. Let me talk about time limitations. For newly formed entities that we're going to talk about today, we'll talk about them first and the older entities. From the time that the entity is filed with the Secretary of State, so Rick, it hits the Secretary of State of California and they said, your LLC is active. We have 90 days to make sure it's in compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. For all the pre-existing entities before January 1st, under the current law, they must be in compliance by December 31st, 2024. And changes to data, which we'll learn about today, we have 30 days to respond to that. So we have those deadlines. The legislation that's moving through Congress kind of extends the deadlines to, instead of December 31st, 2024, let's just change it to December 31st, 2025 to buy us an extra year. And for changes that occur, rather than 30 days filing, 90 days filing. But there's a draconian part of that as well, and I will talk to you about that. So let's talk a little bit about who's exempt from this. I would imagine many, Rick, of your Vistage members are exempt. My law firm, for example, is exempt, and I'll tell you why. But let's start with who does not have to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. There are 23 some odd exemptions. They're pretty narrow, but let's go through them. Public companies. So if you're a public company, you do not have to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. Why? The SEC, FINRA, the New York Stock Exchange, Americans have already been all over the place. Know who the hell you are. You don't need to comply. SEC registered investment advisors that are under the regulation of the SEC, same thing. They're fingerprinted. They know who you are. You're licensed, regulated. They don't have to comply. Venture capital fund advisors, same thing. They don't need to comply. Insurance companies that are regulated by the state and insurance producers that are licensed by the state do not need to comply. Certain highly regulated companies, banks, credit unions, registered securities, broker dealers, all of those highly regulated industries where we know who the people are, don't need to comply. Trust companies don't need to comply, but that doesn't necessarily mean that trusts don't need to comply. And trusts are very interesting. We'll talk about those today because in compliance, any single entity that has to be born by the state or is registered with the state needs to comply. CPA firms that are registered under Sarbanes-Oxley do not need to comply. Tax-exempt entities, charitable organizations, nonprofits, political organizations do not need to comply. Government entities, of course, do not need to apply, of course. But the one that affects most of us is what they call the big company exemption. Now, the big company exemption, which is critical for everybody on the call with us today, is a and, not an or. So here are the requirements for exemption: that we have 20 full-time employees under state law. So a state law definition of a full-time employee, if we have 20 of them, and our headquarters are in the United States, and we have $5 million of gross sales or more, we don't need to comply. If we have subsidiaries of that exempt entity, we do not need to comply. But I want to make it very, very clear. A parent-child subsidiary is not the same as a brother-sister subsidiary. We do, as most people know, we do a lot of entities, a lot of asset protection, estate planning all over the country. And we do literally thousands of entities. And although we'll use me as an example, my law firm is over 20 employees. My law firm does over $5 million of gross sales. My law firm is headquartered in the United States of America. My law firm does not have to comply. However, Harry has 12 other entities that hold real estate, securities, fractional business interests, other businesses. My spouse has a business. I have 12 other entities that I own. Although my law firm doesn't have to comply, Harry needs to comply with the 12 other entities that I'm a beneficial owner of. And many of your members, Rick, will have, maybe their business doesn't comply, but they have their real estate in an LLC, and that LLC leases the real estate to the business. That real estate LLC needs to comply. So when we talk about needing to comply, let's talk about what has to happen to comply and what things that are about. A franchise, that's an LLC, to answer Terry, needs to comply. The fact that it's a franchise is irrelevant. It's the fact that it's an LLC and there's no exception for it. So let me talk about what it takes to comply. If we have an entity that needs to, we'll start with a new one. I think we'll just build a new one. So we're going to start a new entity. We're going to call it Rick Harry Paul Co. LLC. And what do we manufacture? Of course, we manufacture widgets. So we're going to manufacture a bunch of widgets. So we're doing business as Widgets R Us. So we go, let's say it's my firm. We've made the recommendation. My paralegal has now filed everything with the Secretary of State of Delaware. We've authorized it to do business in California. And the entity is born. Once that Secretary of State of Delaware, California, whatever state you're in, says you are born, we now have 90 days to comply for that entity. So let's talk about what it takes for compliance. So the responsible party for compliance, and this is critically important, is our entity. So Rick Harry Paul Co., our company, is the one that's responsible for the compliance of all the issues that are around it. Let me make a non-self-serving, but it might sound self-serving, comment. And that is that the determination, as we go through the Corporate Transparency Act together, of ownership, structures, compliance, really should be done by a law firm. The AICPA that does CPA work, the CPA's organization has told their members to stay away from the CTA as it would be the unauthorized practice of law. And since there are criminal penalties for noncompliance, I think it's really good to work under attorney-client privilege. So I think that's critically important as we go through it together. So we have our reporting company, Rick. So what do we got to do? So we need to go to FinCEN website, all right? First, and what do we have to say for our company, for Rick Harry Paul Co. LLC? We have to file its name, its legal name, as registered with the Secretary of State. We need to give them all of our DBAs. Widgets are us, widgets are them. Widgets and widgets of the world. Every single DBA needs to be part of that disclosure. We also must put down the physical address of our business, not the lawyer's office, not the CPA's office, not a UPS suite. and not a post office box, where our company is located. And we must include for that a very specific government identifying number, which is traditionally the EIN number that we applied for with the IRS. So we have that one. And if it's like a single member LLC that's a disregarded entity, if we didn't get an EIN number for convenience, our Social Security number must go in there. So that is the information that is required for our company that must be filed with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Now, for new companies that are formed after January 1st, 2024, we also must disclose the company applicants. So my paralegal that filed the paperwork for us, Cheyenne, she must report that she filed the paperwork with the state of Delaware. So she must put down her name and her identifying information. So that's critically important. And then if I'm the attorney that recommended that we form this LLC, my identifying information. So the company applicant is Harry Barth Esquire, attorney, Cheyenne Petty, paralegal. These are the company applicants that must also state to our company who put it together. Now, that requirement is not in existence for the pre-existing companies that existed prior to January 1st, 2024. Now we have to go further. So now we have to tell them who all the beneficial owners are of our company who owns 25% or more. I'll take all the questions when we get done. So there's lots of questions, so we'll get to them. So if in our company, Harry has a third, Paul's got a third, Rick's got a third. We are all beneficial owners, and the beneficial owners now must report our information. So we have to say that one third owner is Rick Leckie. Okay, your full legal name, your home address, no bull crap addresses. And we must upload to FinCEN a color copy of a non-expired passport or a non-expired driver's license. Government issued identification must go. We ought to know who you are. Now, for one thing, we do a lot. We're filing FinCENs for hundreds of companies, but one thing we cannot do, there is an option that I suggest everybody who's with us today does. You go to the FinCEN website, and Paul will put up the FinCEN website in the chat for everybody. And when you go there, there is an option, okay, to set up an account with FinCEN. When you set up an account with FinCEN, we can't do it because, you know, they want to know where do you go to high school, where do you go to elementary school, what's the color of your first dog, you know, and they want two-factor authentication. So once you get all authenticated past the Byzantine world of government security, they will ultimately, Rick, issue you a number, a FinCEN identifying number, and you will now have a number, you know, Rick Leckie, number 123456789. So for all of the times that you have to disclose, instead of putting down your home address and sending a copy of your driver's license, you would just put down your FinCEN identifying number. So assuming the three of us have FinCEN identifying numbers, we would now say the beneficial owners are Harry, number so-and-so, Paul, number so-and-so, Rick, number so-and-so, because all of our information has already been uploaded to FinCEN. Okay. Now, trouble is, as with all government legislation, it's not really clear on one thing that's really critically important. It's not also who is a beneficial owner of 25% or more, but anyone who is in control is also a reporting person. So if the managers of our LLC are Harry, Paul, and Rick, Harry, Paul, and Rick also must report our information as managers because we control. Now, let's say we hired a corporation to be the manager of our LLC. Since the corporation now controls the aspects of our LLC, that corporation now becomes a reporting entity. We must report who is the president, who is the COO, who is the CEO, who is the CFO, all right, and anyone that has any control. If there is a board of directors, for that corporation, and that board of directors has the ability to remove and replace C-suite executives. Every member of the board needs to provide their information as well. Oh my God. So it starts to get a little complicated. All right. But now let's make it look. Minors don't need to report. So if a minor owns or a trust for a minor owns 25%, less than 25%, they don't need to report the moment they hit the age of majority. They need to report, but the parents need to report on behalf of the minor. So that all has to happen. If somebody dies, when the probate or trust administration is finished within 30 days, the new owner needs to report. If they do not, the whole organization is out of compliance and the whole organization can be fined. Okay. So now let's continue on a little bit here to do this. I was talking to Vista's chair. We were doing a CTA seminar the other day in Texas. And as we all know, everyone in Texas is in the oil and gas business. So she says to me, you know, let me give you a typical structure of how they drill an oil well in Texas. But it's a great exemplar for today. So he says, you know, we're really concerned. You know, I'm an asset protection attorney. We're really concerned about liability. To those that your members that have worked with me over the years, we want to make sure that everybody's protected for estate planning purposes and asset protection purposes. So we got this oil well. They're going to drill an oil well. Oil wells can blow out. People can get injured on oil wells. Oil wells can catch fire. They're a risky business. So they do the oil well as an LLC. So that LLC is now a reporting entity. But they usually have investors that invest in that. And the investors almost universally come in as LLCs. So we might have four investors. All four of them are LLCs. Every component, the management, the ownership of all of the other LLCs need to be reported. Then some of those LLCs are owned by corporate holding companies. They all need to be reported. Now, to make matters worse, Rick, you know, you were working with me, and I told you, you know, I don't want you to hold your interest as an individual. You need to hold it in your asset protection trust, or you need to hold it living revocable trust. Trusts themselves, because they're not registered with the Secretary of State, are not reporting entities. But if a trust holds 25% or more, or a controlling interest in an entity, now the trust must report. So Rick Leckie, we have, let's say, the Leckie Family Trust. So now you have your one-third interest in there. We must put who settled that trust is a reporting entity. Who the trustees of the trust are the reporting entity. Who the beneficiaries of the trust are, if they have more than 25%, are a reporting entity. If we have trust protectors who can change the trustees, they are reporting entities. If there is a voting trust inside the trust to vote the shares of a company, they become reporting. If we have ESOPs, they become reporting. So we can have a scenario in our simple oil well in Texas, guys and gals, that could have 50 or 60 different reportings to come into compliance. Now, this is relatively complicated or simple, but a mandate. We have 90 days from the time that it's born to ferret that out. Now, when we are preparing a new entity for a client, we do that because we know who the owners are, who the controllers are. We have examined the trusts. We know what the trusts look like. We do that. But when we look backwards, all right, and this is important, we look backwards to the 33 million that need to comply by December 31st, 2024, it becomes a little bit more problematic. So we take a look at Harry's 12 entities alone. Are they in trust? Are they not in trust? What trust are they in? Who are the owners? Who are the controls? I saw a question flash by saying, what if an owner only owns 10%, but they're the manager of the LLC? The manager becomes reporting because it's a control factor. So they could be a 1% owner if they're the manager they need to control. We could have 99% non-voting stock and 1% voting stock. The voting stock, if it controls, they need to report. We can have an LLC that has 10 owners, 10% each. Not one of the 10 percenters need to report, but the managers and the controlling structures must report. Now, what does that tell us, too? It tells us a few things. and an opportunity as well. So when you look backwards, just imagine what we have to go through for an entity, a corporation that was fired up 35 years ago. All right. It does not qualify for an exemption. There's less than 20 employees. And it may have $50 million worth of sales, but only has 18 employees. So that's a reporting entity. This is just an S corporation that was formed in California. And they may have the owners that own 25% or more need to report. And over the years, they've held the trust. They're in subtrust A, subtrust B. That's moved from generation one to generation two as a result of the estate planning. And there were divorces in the family and stock was split in different directions and they're not talking to each other. And so it becomes exceedingly difficult to ferret out all of the, remember the goal, who are all the human beings that own this? Now, remember I mentioned earlier about the draconian aspect of this law, the modifying law that's moving through Congress. It was great that they would extend our reporting requirement from December 24 to December 25. That's welcome, because I don't know how we're going to report 33 million companies in 11 months. And it's great that when we have a change. So if Rick, you have a FinCEN number, you know, Rick Leckie, you know, number 1234567 89, and you move from California to Nevada, you know, with other 700,000 people that left, and you go there, you get a new driver's license and you have a new address. You now have only 30 days to come into compliance to let FinCEN know that you have a new address and a new driver's license and its number. So changes are 30 days. Otherwise, we go out of compliance, $591 a day. And, you know, it was $500 a day up till January 1st when the law went into effect. Then they adjusted it for inflation literally a week ago to $591 a day. This is insanity. Anyway, it is what it is. So the new law that's moving through that gives us the 90 days for changes and the extra year for filing is all about extension of time. But there's an aspect of it that's really, it's written in grammar that it makes it even difficult for us lawyers to understand. But inherently, here's what it says. It says, reporting company to Rick Harry Paul Co. LLC. If you can't give us a complete picture, we got a holdout who's not given the information that's needed, we cannot even look at your filing. There are no exceptions, none. If that one cannot give you, won't give you, terminate them. Buy back their membership interest. Buy back their stock interest. Throw them out. Do whatever you have to do. If it's a bad actor that's not cooperative, it's a time to clean house, because if they don't give you that information that you need, our entire entity is not in compliance. They will be subject to criminal fines and we will be subject to fines as well. So it's just awful. And so when we look at that, there's an opportunity for each and every one of us to do a little housekeeping. Now, what else has to change? So when we created our operating agreement, you know, for Rick Harry Polko, LLC, there needs to be new language inserted that was never there before. And we need to look back. Let's say Rick Harry Polko was done 10 years ago. We need to amend or should amend that operating agreement. Those operating agreements have been sitting in a drawer. You know, the membership interest may have changed hands 2-3 times. It may have been in and out of 2-3 trusts. That operating agreement is way out of whack and not up to speed, which it needs to be for asset protection and estate planning purposes. It gives opportunity to do some inventory, but we need to do something else. We should have put a provision in there that all the members sign in our operating agreement that we will comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. Otherwise, we're not allowed to be a member, or we bought out at less than 50% of book value, some punitive number that could be put in there. So in all shareholder agreements existing, in all corporate documentation lists existing, LLC, limited partnership documentation, we now should modify and amend those to add the language needed to make sure that our company remains in compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. A good thing, Rick, is that it's one and done. Once we have our firm in compliance, it's not an annual reporting requirement. Only changes need to be reported, but if we have no changes, we're done. At least we have that part pretty much to get done. And there's two components. That's why I said a law firm really should do this. You could do it yourself. Good luck navigating the Byzantine website and trying to get someone, because you need to look at a trustee, but who are the people empowered in the trust? And there are no exceptions. How are you going to do that if you don't, if you're not experienced with trusts and corporate governance and LLC governance? I don't know how you're going to do it. So, for example, in our organization, not saying anything, we charge $595 to review an existing entity, get all the beneficial owners and controllers in the right place. And then at the end of the day, $250 to file it, end of story, we're done. So, and there are other organizations that'll be doing things similarly. We could try to do it yourself. I won't even do my own myself. So you get that done. And I think it's real important to take the opportunity to do an inventory, get rid of bad players, you know, get rid of people that are just hanging in there that have virtually little or no interest but could cause problems. And so the Corporate Transparency Act in all of its iterations are, if you have a non-exempt company and we have the file, who owns it? Who controls it? Control is just as important as ownership. Over 25% interest, and how is that interest held? And we have seen this. I've done it myself, where an LLC is owned by another LLC, which is owned by a trust that has subtrusts. Right up that one thing for one member, it's like our oil well, there could be 20 disclosures under the Corporate Transparency Act. One of the, let me wax philosophical for a second for everybody. Where a little bit of gut experience comes to play about constitutionality. What does this act do? It sure puts a burden on every small business. Every legitimate small business has to comply. Even if we don't file a tax return, they don't put us in jail. If we don't pay our taxes, we may have civil penalties and interest, but they don't put you in jail. They're saying here, if you don't comply, so we build our database to know who you are, we will put you in jail. And they're very clear about that. You get up to 2 years for willfully not complying with this act. And when you do this, you have to look at the benefit to the country versus the burden to business. And the other side of it, and there's a cost. You know, what's the cost that's involved? Not only just in dollars and cents, but time that we all now have to spend in dealing with compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. And data. We got data, Rick, that's now going to be flying around between business owners, the people that are going to help them comply with the Corporate Transparency Act, government websites. That's very sensitive data. It's ID numbers, it's tax ID numbers, it's driver's licenses, it's passports. The protection, the encryption and protection of that data flying around the country is a playground for bad actors to try to intercept that information. So the heightened level of technological security that has to be in place when you're using it, we had to build special vaults to move an encryption, to move that data from our clients to ourselves and from ourselves to the government. You know, there's a cost associated with that. But at the end of all that, you have to say to yourself, why are they doing this? They're doing this to allegedly ferret out or make it difficult for the bad actors to hide behind front companies and shell companies. I mean, it could easily be an LLC that we say is a hair salon. You know, that's a bad example because in California, a hair salon can't be an LLC, but it could be a corporation. You got a hair salon, two stylists. And those two stylists are styling hair all day. But really, behind the scenes, behind the dye and the cutting, is the cartel. And the cartel is using that entity to launder money. That's what they're after. So that's the complying entity, because that's the type of entities that are used. But what do I think? I think 33 million entities and growing are going to have to comply. Those 33 million entities, Rick, with you look at all the beneficial ownerships and control, will turn into 200 million disclosures in a year. God bless us. And you know what else? The key to me on constitutionality or not, or any government legislative act, will it do anything to cut down on terrorist financing and money laundering? The bad actors are going to find a way around it. They always do. So all the good, legitimate businesses are going to be stuck with compliance and disclosure. And to me, the bad actors are going to find a way around it. And it's just kind of like, you know, when good people, they take away the guns from good people, the bad people, they'll still get guns. They don't care. They're not registering their guns. They get them illegally and use guns. The cartels and the terrorists find it, they'll create human beings with artificial intelligence and they'll create passports and they'll create driver's licenses. They'll do all the things they need to do. So at the end of the day, yeah, they'll have this big database. Now, this big database, and this is important because I saw some of the questions, which we're about to take in a minute, is not public. All right. It's only for law enforcement. It's not, and there are very, very serious fines and penalties, imprisonment for anyone that releases any of that information. It's kind of like what happened with Trump tax returns, that guy's getting 5 years in jail for releasing a tax return illegally. So the government has allegedly, if we could trust them, built a significant security involved. So this database of all companies in America is not public. So when we're creating a Wyoming LLC where the members and the managers are private, they will remain private, but it will be registered with the government registry for the Corporate Transparency Act. So I think that there's a lot that has to be done here. Do I think it's here to stay? The answer is yes. Some aspects of it, maybe the criminality aspects of it, might be declared unconstitutional. The timing of things might be maybe extensions of time to get things done. There are no exceptions, none, zero, because they say that defeats the whole purpose. If we have two unknown people in the entity, those two unknown people are the people that literally that we're after. So hence now everybody knows what has to be done. Now, it's one and done. If everybody out there gets a FinCEN identifying number, it's a little easier. We bring it into compliance. We update changes. And there it is. So those are the things, and I think it's here to stay.
Want to go to questions here?
Let's go to questions. We have about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. So let's just fire away as many questions as we possibly can. There's a lot here, but you guys now pretty much, you could take all different iterations, but control, ownership, put it together, got to get it to the government. Yes, go ahead.
Rick, do you want me to field these? You want to go in there and get them, or what do you want to do?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, all right. So Harry, asking, and maybe you answer this, if we use the attorney address for proof of service, et cetera, but not our physical address on these forms, who is going to see these forms? Is it open to the public? I mean, you address that.
The form is not open to the public. You cannot use the attorney's address. It must be the physical address of the owners, physical address of those that are in control, and the physical address of the business. Cannot use the attorney's office.
Okay. And so you don't.
Oh, by the way, just one other thing. Foreign companies that do business in the United States of America, if they've registered their company to get a certificate of good standing, so company that's a Chinese company comes in and registers a company here in California, that company is also subject to the Corporate Transparency Act, the same as a U.S. company. Go ahead.
Okay. And so they're saying they don't lose the shielding, the asset protection shielding of an LLC this. Okay. Silent partners aren't going to be so silent anymore. That's true. A manager with owner, 10% ownership, do they need to be reported?
Yes. Because they have control. They could have a 1%. Matter of fact, try this. They don't have to have any percent. They could be the manager if they have control. If you're, you have a CFO, a CEO that has, doesn't, you know, they, like we say, when I speak to Vistage groups, I'm a hired gun. I don't have any ownership interest. Family owns it all. They're still reporting persons because they have control.
Okay.
And but
sure. Yeah.
But Harry, they're exempt if they meet the three criteria, correct?
That's correct. So if the company has over 20 full-time employees, they're based in the United States, and they have over 5 million gross sales, they're exempt. And their subsidiaries are exempt. So if I have a subsidiary that holds real estate, a subsidiary that owns intellectual property, a subsidiary that owns equipment, which is wholly owned by the exempt entity, the subsidiaries are exempt. However, that's poor planning. Usually what will happen, as you know, they have OPCO that's operating the business, all right, and then they have LLCs that own the real estate, may own the intellectual, or should have the LLCs that own the real estate, and those things need to be in appropriate trusts. Those are not parent-child entities. Those are brother-sister entities. All of them are reporting entities. And then if the exempt company, you know, the 20 U.S., 5 million gross sales, owns 25%, the company owns 25% or more of the LLC that owns the real estate, then that becomes a reporting company because it has a 25% beneficial owner, and all of its ownership and control then needs to report. It gets, could get, like I said, it could be very simple. So for example, if you have your, you know, the Rick Lecky Living Revocable Trust, and inside of it, you have your house and a brokerage account, you know, and some savings accounts, and a couple pieces of art, there's no reporting whatsoever. There are no entities. Now change it a little bit. You have Rick Lecky Living Revocable Trust. It owns 25% of an LLC that has a piece of real estate. That LLC, you're a reporting person in that LLC, but since that LLC is held in your Living Revocable Trust and it owns 25%, it becomes a reporting entity. And all the, you have to examine now the trust, because as you know, you've seen me do them, they're complicated, can become quite complicated with different parties with different functions. You can have trustees that have investment control, trustees that have managerial control. You can have protectors that can remove and replace trustees. There are lots of things we do for estate planning and asset protection purposes that create a complex trust. Every one of those need to be analyzed as to whether or not they have enough control in the trust to do it. So it's not the trust company that's reporting, but if do I have four trustees in the trust company that can handle my trust, those four individuals who are trustees need to report on behalf of the trust company. And there are some discussions going on in Washington as whether there are professional trustees in a trust company, whether individual reporting is required. At the moment, individual reporting is required.
Harry,
this will change. Yes.
Okay. So you confirm a FinCEN account is set up by individual, not by the LLC or company.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. And someone's asking here too, is it safest for all owners just to report even if under 25%? That way they don't get in trouble for missing a controlling entity?
Well, you know, it's not a requirement. So you say, if I own 10% of the company, and you know, if you use a limited partnership, you got 10% limited partnership. Limited partnerships don't have any control, and they're not the general partner. General partner could have an iota, but has all the control. So the general partner is always reporting. So if you say, hey, look, I had five owners, each at 20%, 20, 20, 20, 20, they're not required to report. My opinion is if they're not required to report, do not report. However, you know, one, you now go ahead and buy, I own 20, 20, 20, 20, Rick has 20%. Rick decides that he's going to go retire and live under a palm tree somewhere. Harry buys Rick's 20%. Now Harry has 40%. I now have a change. So I have a 40%. I'm now a reporting owner. All right. And we have that. I have to report. It also depends on whether the membership interest in the LLC or the stock in the company is voting or non-voting. All right. Doesn't matter. S&C is irrelevant. Voting and non-voting, because sometimes you could have, like I said, 99% of the owners are non-voting. All right. And you not, might not have one that's over 10, over 25%, but the one person that has the voting control at 5% is a reporting reporting controlling person in the reporting entity, if an entity is required to report. So not only that, so it's the owners, the controllers, the entity, and the people that, since January 1st, 2024, who put it together for you. You know, you went to LegalZoom. LegalZoom has to report if they filed it. You know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, we're seeing it. You've been giving a lot of talks for rental apartment associations. We're seeing a lot of this with people in rental income property because they need to have it in LLC for protection. And then it needs to go into their trust to avoid probate because they want to pass the property on to the next generation.
One time we analyze it.
Do it.
Right. You get a professional to analyze it. These are the reporting parties. You get it done. You send it to the filing service. The filing service files it. You're done. It does not have to be draconian, but there is going to be some time and cost associated with it. That's correct.
Yeah.
Rick. So, Harry, what agency is responsible for overseeing this, and how's that going to work?
That's FinCEN. So that's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is a division of the Department of Treasury. Yeah, they're not monkeying around. And criminal penalties, man. Real live ones.
Yeah.
It's the same people. They put the same people in charge that have the FinCEN reports for offshore bank accounts. If you have an offshore bank account of greater than $10,000, you must report it to the Treasury. All right. FinCEN is the agency, Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. This is a database to use to try to get behind financial crimes. That's all it is. It's not public, and it could be shared with the government of United Kingdom with us. They share with us now who's behind it. Remember, the purpose is noble. The purpose is to not let nefarious players shield themselves with corporations and layers of LLCs. I know how to do those. I could put things where the sun does not shine, and they could drill forever and they won't find it. And there was no penalty for that. All right. People have hired us to gain anonymity, but it's depending on where the anonymity is used. So if, for example, if you don't want people to know where you live, Rick, right, because you don't want, you know, you make a lousy Vistage chair decision. And next thing you know, people are in front of yourself with pitchforks and torches, you know, saying, you know, with the windmill like Frankenstein, they're on your front lawn. You want some privacy. We can structure things in a way that you don't show up on public records. That's all good. That has not changed. But who's behind the veil in the government database for law enforcement purposes is there now. We need to know who they are.
Great information, Harry. Rick, I want to thank you too. I want to thank everybody for being here. We're going to get the replay out, so hang tight. Look for that in your email. We'll send that out to you.
There's more questions too.
Is there more questions? We have another one?
Yeah, I saw Tanya show up.
Oh, so do trusts that are an offshore account need to report?
So Tanya, the answer to that question, I know Tanya very well. So the answer to that question is the trust itself is not a reporting entity. But if the trust owns more than 25% of a reporting entity, then the trustees of the trust need to report. And there are some controversy or unresolved issues on, again, professional trust company reporting. But right now, I would say they are reporting. But if you have a usually the structure is you have an LLC that holds all the stocks, the bonds, the cash, and that LLC sits inside whether a domestic asset protection trust or an international asset protection trust to protect those dollars and cents. Then that trust, which owns the reporting entity, does become a reporting entity. That's correct.
So, Harry, even with filing done appropriately, one has to be very sensitive to changes.
Yes, and that's what I mentioned earlier, that you need to, a couple things that have to happen. One, corporate documentation, LLC documentation, limited partnership documentation needs to be revised. So just like we have to file a tax returns or we have to have an agent for service of process, just as we have to have that, we should have, you know, who's responsible for monitoring changes and making sure that they are reported in a timely fashion. Yes, it's a new burden.
Wow.
You bet. If there's no other questions, Rick, it's great to see you.
Harry, Paul, good to see you.
It's great to see you guys. we're here to help anybody, anywhere, anytime, any place. You know, like, and they all say, you know, the Greeks said, you don't like the message, don't kill the messenger. I didn't write this act. Okay. Take care, guys. Right. Thank you all very much.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye now.